Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Weekly Spotlight. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting three comics that came out in shops last week, but that John and I got from DCBS this week. One from DC, one from Marvel, and one from some other publisher. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be discussing in this episode originally came out on April 30th, 2008, and this was the biggest overall shipment I had in April, Bob, but not, I guess it was actually dead center for the number of comics. I had 31 comics, the bags and boards for DCBS hit the thing this time, four trades and a magazine.
Yeah, I had a lot of extra stuff this week. I had the 32 comics, but then I had seven trade paperback kind of things. I had Adam Strange Archives, the Complete Green Llama archive from Dark Horse.
I got that.
Punisher Circle of Blood, the premier hardcover, and the Death Dealer deluxe hardcover from Image. Complete Dick Tracy Volume 4.
God.
Facts and the Departure of Miss Finch hardcover, which has been on order for like a year and a half or something, and the Witchblade Takeru manga. And then also, not from DCBS, but I finally my Terry and the Pirates Volume 3 came from Amazon this week. And then I got four other things, which were Rough Stuff Number 8, Modern Masters Volume 16 by Mike with Mike Allred, the Light Ray figure from the New God series, and my Spidey six-arm minibus from Bowen.
Cool.
My favorite cliffhanger moment ever from Spider-Man.
Yeah.
From Spider-Man 100.
See, I got Rough Stuff. The other trades I got were the all-new Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe A to Z hardcover Volume 2, Hotshot and Mighty Girl graphic novel, and the Showcase Presents Challengers of the Unknown Volume 2.
What is Hotshot and Mighty Girl? I haven't heard of that one.
I was actually thinking that was one you were going to get. That was from Platinum. It was... I think you didn't get it because it was $14.99. Because I know we talked about it at one point. It looked like it had pretty good art. But it was kind of a crapshoot as to you know, how good the story was going to be. Or even... I'm trying to remember how long the story was going to be. This was not an incredibly thick graphic novel. It may only be like 96 pages or something.
Okay.
But it looked interesting, so I figured, what the hell? I'll give it a shot.
So when you get around to reading it in a year or two, let me know.
I might get to it a little sooner, but...
I don't know how long it was in the sit in your pile of 2,000 comics to read. Let me know.
Well, for a quick update on that, because it's been a few weeks since I've talked about it, I've caught up on the mainstream Marvel and DC universes. So I can enjoy, you know, the DC Universe era we're going to talk about today, Final Crisis, and enjoy and hopefully understand Secret Invasion. And so far, I think that's off to an excellent start. But I'm still massively behind on indies and non-mainstream Marvel DC stuff. So things like the Wolverine First Class, X-Men First Class, Batman Confidentials, the All-Star line, although I'm current on the Ultimate line. And stuff like Fables, Jack of Fables, I'm behind on. And then indies going back still to, I think, the February 20th shipment. So I've got 114 items in my to-read-as-soon-as-I-can pile. But that includes the Marvel Masterwork Nick Fury one I got, and the Hotshot and Mighty Girl graphic novel, and the Empowered trade. But other than that, I usually don't include trades and hardcovers in this count.
Yeah.
So, lot to read. So.
Indeed.
But beyond DCBS, I made a couple of purchases recently, and one or two have trickled in. The big one was I finally decided to go ahead and order the DVD collections that I didn't have for the Marvel stuff from Eagle One Media. So, and part of it is, since they've switched to the Digital Comics Unlimited thing online, once these DVDs are gone, that's it. You know, you're not going to be able to get them. So I figured it was worth grabbing.
Were they any kind of a sale, less than the $50 or whatever their main price is?
A little bit, but not by much. $5-$10. It was a token amount. I would have been happier if they had had kind of blowout prices. And for some of them, they were down to like under 20 copies left or something. So if you're interested, I recommend going quickly. But I got the Civil War Complete Collection, the Fantastic Four Silver Surfer Complete Collection, the Ghost Rider Complete Collection, the House of M Complete Collection, the Invincible Iron Man Complete Collection, and the Ultimate X-Men Complete Collection. I already had the 40 Years of Avengers, the 40 Years of X-Men, the 44 Years of Fantastic Four, the Incredible Hulk Complete Collection, the Captain America Complete Collection, and the Amazing Spider-Man Complete Collection. So this gives me a fairly complete collection of their complete collections. So, but just in terms of reference and stuff, you know, this is something that I just wanted to have these. Mm-hmm. So now if at any point I want to go read, you know, more or less any Iron Man story, any Fantastic Four, any X-Men in terms of the main title, or Cap or Hulk, I've got those as options. So,
cool.
But that was a couple of pennies. Well, shall we dive into our first title of DC Universe Zero?
Sure.
Now, for me, my expectation of this going in was this was a zero issue. It was a prologue of sorts to what they're going to be doing primarily in Final Crisis and elsewhere. It was a 50-cent comic, so it was a promotional comic. And after the train wreck that was Countdown, I'm not going to say I had high expectations at all, but this meted and exceeded all of my expectations, and everything I thought they were doing wrong in Countdown, I thought they did right here. I was very pleased with this, and it has me kind of very excited going forward for what's going to happen in DC.
Well, I mean, the main thing that they did right with this one is they had, sorry, Paul Dini, but, I mean, they had Grant Morrison and Jeff Johns writing it.
Yeah.
That's going to put you off on the right foot right from the beginning. And then, you know, he had George Perez and a cast of thousands doing the art. You can't really go wrong with, you know, you got like George Perez, Jeff Johns, Ivan Rice, Tony Daniel, Doug Monkey. You know, there's like all kinds of people doing the art on it. You know, each one's doing their couple of pages, but you can't go wrong with that. And you got, you know, what about 2 to 3 pages of each little vignette?
Sometimes 3 or 4, but yeah, or 5, sometimes a little longer. But yeah, they were short sequences, and the way they broke them up made the shifts between artists pretty much almost unnoticeable. You know, it was not something where I flipped the page and thought, oh my God, what happened or something. It was solid art throughout.
You know, the main one was like 5 or 6 pages. Then you had 3 pages of Batman, 3 pages of Wonder Woman. I'm looking here. You got 3 pages of Green Lantern. Then you got the Spectre thing for 3 pages, the supervillains for 4 pages, and then kind of like the final page. So,
yeah,
I totally didn't pick up on who the narrator was. And even with the little logo on that bubble on the last page fading in, I'm like beating my head. I was like, who could that, you know, it makes perfect sense. You tell me. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but you know, okay. You know,
but yeah, reading the
I don't read the, you know, like Newsarama and those places. So I didn't get I just was clueless. So.
No, to me, it kind of made sense, particularly on that last page. You know, I didn't need to have somebody like Newsarama, you know, or DC tell me what it was. And it was one of those that it's heavy on the implications, light on the, you know, explicitness, which is kind of cool. And there were one or two things that, you know, I'm kind of curious where they're going with. And what I really liked about this was, you know, as a promo thing, it worked really well. The first, you know, 3 pages kind of a really, really quick, I don't want to say history, but explanation of the multiverse and, you know, the previous crisis stuff. And just a quick get you up to speed, which is cool. Then they've got stuff with Superman, And, I mean, just some gorgeous art there. And then they do, at the end of each of these chapters, kind of a full-page ad. Not kind of, exactly. A full-page ad of, hey, if you liked what you just read in these pages, basically, here's where to go find the rest. So as a promotional thing, and just in terms of this issue, I thought the placement of these house ads was very sharp and smart. So, and this was all teaser-type stuff. It's, you know, trying to get you excited about what's going on in some of the Final Crisis titles and some of the core titles. So, it...
Yeah, they did do a very good job on the house ads. They had a consistent look and feel to them. They were placed right to let you know kind of where to go next. The house ads almost, you know, even kind of integrated in to the point where, hey, you know, this is just the next page of the story where it just says, go.
Yeah.
Go to this place.
Exactly.
Although I, you know, one thing that actually they pulled into here is there's going to be, I guess, some miniseries to Final Crisis that I didn't realize that they were going to have because they haven't been solicited yet, like Final Crisis Revelations with the Spectre stuff, it looks like, and the Final Crisis Legion of Three Worlds. Jeff Johns and George Perez.
That one they had a really good in-house ad for at the end of the Superman and the Legion story in action. And that's one that if you like these couple of pages and you have not been reading action for the last 7 months, go do so. Because there's the six-part Superman and the Legion, and then the most recent action that came out this week also, I think is well worth reading. But, I mean, it's Jeff Johns. I mean, come on. So this has really kind of renewed my faith in DC and kind of their big picture and their plan and stuff, that they may actually have a good game plan and may actually do some good stuff going forward. Because I really was not the least bit pleased overall with Countdown and really didn't feel it built up to anything. So... And, I mean, 50 cents, how can you go wrong with this? At the local shop here, Austin Books, they were giving it away on Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah, that's pretty smart. I mean, because it is, while it's a really good primer, it is pretty much just setting up lots of other books that, you know, people could buy over the course of the summer.
Yeah, so... I did find a few noticeable absences from this. Nothing on the Titans. Nothing really on the JSA at all. And, I mean, there's only so many pages to this, so, I mean, I get that. But those were a little surprising. But, obviously, I give this a definite thumbs up.
Yeah, me too. I, you know, especially for the price point, and anyone who's a DC fan at all should be picking this up. If you're interested in DC in the slightest, don't let the train wreck that was Countdown, you know, scare you away from this because it is night and day different from that.
I would say it had I would say it had zero connection to Countdown.
Yeah.
So.
In fact, in that, you know, what we were talking about last week, you know, that the end of Countdown, they're setting up all that, you know, like what are they going to do with Jimmy Olsen and Forager? What are they going to do with, you know, the, what are they calling the Kyle and Donna and
the Challengers of the Beyond is the tag they've kind of gotten, but not,
you know,
totally.
There's absolutely nothing about any of those things in this, which is kind of interesting. I mean, they just kind of like set all that stuff up in Countdown, and it's like that leads me to believe that none of that stuff is going to be involved in Final Crisis in a tangible way, but, you know, who knows. Maybe they're just distancing themselves from that.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, one of the things that I think is a key difference between DC Universe Zero and Countdown and even Countdown and 52 is with 52 and DC Universe Zero here, they were not only going for the sale of those titles, those comics, but kind of that second sale of what do we do after that? Because it doesn't matter if you pick up any given comic so much as if you pick that up and then get the next one. This is a serial-based medium. And certainly here with DC Universe Zero, with all the house ads, they were using this to promote half their line of comics. With 52, they had an exit strategy to where when some of these characters got popular, like Booster Gold and some of the others, they had viable spin-off titles. Countdown had, with the exception of the Challengers of the Beyond stuff, really nothing that had any hope of getting spun out at all. Now, granted, some of the stuff that spun out of 52, Infinity Inc., the Metal Men miniseries and stuff like that, has been different than what was in 52 and kind of weak or whatever. But they at least had a plan going in. So, you know, the fact right. that nothing's coming out of Countdown, and if we're lucky, nothing will. I mean, come on.
I'm just curious. I mean, you know, they spent an entire year, week after week. I'm sorry, I don't want to, like, turn this into another rag on Countdown, but they spent this entire year. I was kind of, especially when they renamed it halfway through, calling it Countdown to Final Crisis. You know, I would kind of expect it to be doing stuff that was directly pertinent and leading into Final Crisis. And, you know, when I read the Final Crisis, you know, lead-in stuff in DC Zero, I can't see how the stuff in Countdown was any kind of a lead-in to any of this stuff. You know, it just...
Agreed. You know, it's and that's part of why it was so disappointing. And, I mean, they set up more story points and had, I think, more story in the single issue of DC Universe Zero than any half dozen or dozen, with the exception of the great disaster of Countdown. So, you know, I really think that we're hitting kind of a make-or-break point for the DC Universe for a while in terms... Not that it's going to go under or anything. Don't get me wrong. It's not. But kind of in terms of their credibility and their reputation creatively, if Final Crisis in the next 6 months or so doesn't have some stuff that really clicks with the audience, it's going to turn a lot of people off to DC for a while. And I don't think they can afford that. So... But this was a good springboard for half a dozen stories, and really has me interested in most of them.
It has, yeah. It has renewed my faith in a lot of things. But I think it also has just basically said, you know, if I'm at DC, I've got to really just pay attention to who's writing it. If you know,
yeah,
a good team is in the driver's seat, it's likely to be good. But it. I guess what I really get down to in the end is editorial is not strong enough at DC right now to steer a book in the right direction if it doesn't have a really strong creative team on it. Because, you know, you take a marquee book like Countdown, and the fact that it was such a train wreck just goes to show that it's like editorial is not stepping in and saying, man, this is just not working. You got to, you know, and doing something to fix it.
Well, I agree with that, but I think it goes a step further back that, you know, Paul Dini was not the right choice for the head writer on that. He's got a lot of strength and stuff, but a 51-issue weekly series, he was not... I don't think he had the comic book track record to justify that. So, but I think few people do, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it comes down to you got to pay attention to the creators.
Yeah, but even that, I mean, what I'm saying is that, you know, having a strong editor, if DiDio as editor-in-chief was paying attention, I mean, couldn't he read these stories back around issue 40 to 25 and just say, come on, what's going on? Let's get something going. And you bring in somebody else to help. I mean,
they did, because around 26, and this is, again, more on Countdown and stuff, that's when they had the recap story. That's when Mike Carlin was doing some of the editing and stuff. There was a point where they were starting to turn that around. But it's a weekly series. It's real easy for it to go off the rails really quick.
Yeah, well, they didn't do a good job of it. I mean, maybe they tried.
They tried. They did not succeed. I would agree with that. So, but, I mean, they need to have a better eye for picking the right talent for the right job. And, you know, for a big weekly event, you've got to go conservative. You've got to go with somebody you know can do it. So, and have backup plans in place just in case they get hit by a bus or something. So,
okay, so let's move on to Marvel. New Warriors number 11. What do you think?
I have had mixed feelings on this title pretty much since it started. In this one, I liked how they kind of tied in with the old New Warriors and some of the stuff going on in Avengers Initiative. But for the core new Warriors in this title, I just have really a hard time because while I know I've read all of these characters before, I have a hard time placing now which one was this again, and where did this guy come from, what was his name and powers prior to the new set he's got now. I mean, some of them, like Jono, it's pretty easy because he's, you know, pretty identifiable. But even sometimes with Jubilee and stuff, she looks enough like two or three of the other characters that, you know, I read these issues and tend to be just a little bit lost on some of it for far too much of it. So, I like the villain they brought back to in this issue. That was cool. It's been a little while since he's been seen. It's not a bad series. It's one that I kind of sort of enjoy. At best, I would say I'm neutral on. I'm not hating it. But if I had to make cuts in the Marvel lineup of what I'm getting, this would be one I could probably cut. Certainly, it's one I'd cut before a lot of other titles. So, what'd you think?
I was pretty neutral on it also. I have been, my interest has been waning in this series for the last while, and this issue was better than the last couple of issues, certainly. It's part three of four, I think. Well, I don't know if it's four. It's part three of some number. Sorry, it's number 11, so I'm thinking maybe the arc is going to wrap up at 12. The art was good. I liked the art.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I liked it better in the well-lit scenes than the dark scenes. Maybe that speaks to the colorist. It was a little murky in some of the dark scenes. You know, the scenes in the diner looked much clearer.
Yeah. I put that on the colorist, not so much the artist.
Yeah. And when you get, like, to the stuff with, I don't know how much of a reveal naming the villain is, but I'm going to name it. So
fair enough.
If you don't want to know who the villain is, stop listening now for 10 seconds. But Machine Smith, when they, you know, flipped to him on that meanwhile page and he got, like, you know, the heavy reds and, you know, kind of explosions and stuff like that, it just, the coloring just gets over-rendered to the point where it murks up the art to some extent, you know, for that. Well, probably about the last three pages of the issue. But I mean, I agree with you. It's a book that's okay. I'm interested in it. If I had to cut five books from Marvel, this would be one of them.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if you really like the New Warriors, if you like the old New Warriors, you know, they're more in the Initiative. They make an appearance here. I'd be curious in how that's going to play out over the next few issues. If you're really a big Night Thrasher fan, he's got something going on here that has not completely come to fruition yet. So maybe there's going to be a really cool reveal. You know, they've got that subplot running through here that Night Thrasher's got something big that he's up to. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that that's going to just be really, really cool and is going to have made everything worth it. You know, I'm kind of crossing my fingers on that. And if I get that, then, you know, that'll be very positive for the series going forward. If whatever it is that has been going on is, you know, falls flat, then I am likely to drop the series. So I'm kind of like on the fence, and I'm waiting for the resolution of whatever that is, and we'll see.
Yeah, it's one that I agree. I hope it really pans out and delivers a good reveal, but I don't really have the faith that it will. And again, it's not a bad series. It's just another series, and one that I don't think is really kind of justified its existence totally to me. You know, flip side though, like I was saying, it's not one that I'm thinking, oh God, why are they publishing this and it sucks or anything, because it doesn't. It's decent story. The art's good, solid art. Coloring could use a little work, but you know, it's professionally done, and you know, again, average quality. But it's got so much it's competing against that that's not enough these days.
Yeah, there's just so much going on in the Marvel Universe right now. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly not core to what's going on right now with Secret Invasion. It was a lot more core to the initiative stuff, but that seems to have kind of petered out and been washed away by the Secret Invasion stuff. That kind of tailed off a bit when the new event rolled into town.
Funny how that happens.
Yeah. But these guys were definitely on the initiative train, and they missed the transfer at Grand Event Station. You know, they didn't get over onto the Secret Invasion line when that one pulled out of the station.
Well, I think the problem was they took the bypass around World War Hulk.
Yeah, that's true.
So, that's funny.
Let's move over to Radical Comics. We got Calibur, First Canon of Justice, and that's canon with one N, not two. And we had mentioned these books previously when we did the preview episode a month ago with Barry Levine from Radical. But, you know, and I had seen the PDF files of this, but seeing it actually printed like this just reinforces to me how much more I like a tangible comic book in my hands than reading things electronically on the screen.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because I'm going to say that in my mind, and this is me personally, I think Radical made a mistake. And it's an understandable mistake, but they went for square binding on this. And I was surprised you could square bind something this, I don't want to say this small, because it's standard, what, 32-page kind of deal. But normally for square binding, you're at least 48 pages, whatever. And I really think, particularly for this kind of a story and this art, square binding was a huge mistake. If they'd done saddle stitching, when you've got the two-page spread on the second and third page, you'd be able to lie it flat and see all of it. As it is, stuff gets a little lost in the gutter. And for a full bleed comic that has some outstanding art and, you know, in again, one or two places, some really nice two-page spreads like that one. I'm trying to think if there's another one in here. I'd like to be able to lie it flat. I'd like to be able to see all of it. And I've never been a fan of square binding. But so, you know, that's my personal preference. I think this would have been a little better, again, saddle stitched.
Oh, yeah, point taken. But, you know, also, when you're looking at it on screen, that two-page spread didn't translate there very well at all, you know, because your screen's only so big, and, you know, it makes it smaller overall to be able to see the two pages at once.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, for physical packaging, this is really nice. It's a good card, you know, kind of a stock, but not too thick cover. It's excellent quality printing. It's nice, you know, glossy paper, whatever. It's a very professionally done packaging, and by doing the square binding, conceivably they could even get this into bookstores.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point that you can't lay it flat with the square binding, but, you know, other than that, it is a beautiful package.
Oh, totally.
I mean, the thick cardstock cover, the nice quality paper, the art is gorgeous in this. It's by Gari Gastani. Writer is Sam Sarkar. Just, you know, briefly again, this is kind of the Arthurian legend moved into the Pacific Northwest. And you have the various Indians involved. Merlin has become kind of a half French, half Indian shaman, and you have Captain Pendragon, or is he Colonel Pendragon? I forget.
Captain.
But Captain, his son Arthur, and you have the Excalibur is a gun, and it's just, you know, they're trying to figure out who that legendary weapon belongs with. The story is very nicely executed, in my opinion. Now, it didn't, you know, I've talked to some people that when we were on the previews call last night, Brent Cassina from Comic Timing, for instance, he he was not that enthused about the story. So it's not going to click with everyone, but I loved it. I thought it was a great story. You know, that's no guarantee. It's the fact that we like it. But, you know, for me, I thought they did an excellent job on this. And the art blows away art, you know, from almost anything else that I'm seeing on the comic book stands today. The painted quality of the art, the quality that the coloring is lending to it, you know, just the, you know, the soft glows when you have the sunsets, you know, the fire, the cold feel you get out of that two-page spread, you know, with kind of the snow or the mist or whatever like that, on that page 2 and 3 spread, just everything about this. And it's a dollar.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, to try it out. And it goes to a normal $2.99 price with the next issue. But, you know, boy, I'm hearing from a lot of people, too, that this is totally sold out at the stores.
I believe it. You know, it's got a great cover. It looks very professionally done because it is professionally done. And I think once people pick it up and flip through it, they're going to be blown away by the interior art. Then they're going to read the story and really like it. So it's selling out, not a surprise.
Yeah, I'm just worried about people being able to get their hands on these things. Because, you know, this is the kind of thing that, you know, it's a dollar comic. It's gorgeous. There is no reason other than the fact that Radical is doing a really nice job of trying to introduce their product to the market. There is no earthly reason this should not be a $3.99 book. You know, if this was from any other indie publisher, it wouldn't even be a $2.99 book the way this package looks. And the fact that it's a dollar and is as beautiful as it is, you know, it came out 2 weeks ago, right, essentially, by the time people listen to this.
Yeah.
And I don't think it made it to that first weekend. You know, by the time Free Comic Book Day, because, you know, when I was in the stores on Free Comic Book Day, I didn't see this at the comic book stores. I think it sold out before Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing it at the store I went to either. But I'm not exactly sure where they would have put it either. They do strange racking, genre racking, which boggles my mind. But yeah, this is one that I really hope Radical goes back to press on and, you know, is able to leverage that sellout. And
I,
you know, keep it available.
I almost think they made a mistake putting three different covers on this issue. And the reason I think that is it is so beautiful and it's also so cheap. I bought all three covers. You know, it's like, yeah, it's only a buck. What the hell? I'm going to get all three different covers to caliber number one. I think a lot of people did that. And it kept it out of the hands of a lot of potential fans.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the store owners, I don't think, ordered this as heavily as they might have. So hopefully there's going to be some serious reorder capability going on with this so that it can be put into the hands of more people.
Well, this is like the early Valiant stuff in so much as you've got a publisher essentially coming out of nowhere that's a complete unknown. So, of course, retailers are going to be kind of conservative on it. They get requests. They'll get stuff for their pull lists and a few for the rack. But they're not going to say, oh, wow, this is, you know, a new company. I'm going to invest whole hog in it. Why should they? So when it comes out and it's this solid, this good, and Radical's been doing a very good job promoting it. They really hit the podcast circuit. They were on a number of podcasts beyond just our previews one. So they're trying to build an audience for this, which I really think is a smart move and has paid off. So we may see both strong numbers for this and, you know, a decent kind of back issue market for it or whatever if people decide to let loose of some of their copies. You know, again, just like we did with the early Valiant stuff, you know.
Yeah, I think that potentially if there is supply of it, you could very well see very strong reorder activity on these number ones.
Well, conceivably enough to again, provided they have the supply there, I could see the reorder activity matching the initial orders.
And I, you know, the point for Radical is, boy, I don't know if they're just breaking even on this or even losing money on putting this thing out for a dollar.
I got to imagine they're losing
some money. It's just a promotional thing. I mean, because it's so nice. If they can put this out for a dollar and not totally lose money, which, I mean, and depending on how much they're losing on it, it's like it makes you wonder why any book is, you know, the price it is, because this thing is just so nice.
We'll figure at best they're getting, you know, 50 cents of this dollar, probably closer to 40 cents. And, you know, the printing's going to cost for some of that. And, of course, you know, it's going to take a little while to put together this kind of a package. They had to spend some money on the content. They've got to be losing money. This is strictly promo pricing, which, again, smart move. It gets people to try it. And having a good, solid launch of the first two titles with both Calibur and Hercules sets them up with a good reputation, whereas I think Virgin kind of bungled that a little. Not that their initial stuff was bad, it just didn't click with the American audience. Then they get a reputation of being low-selling titles, comparatively. You know, they're right. 5,000 range, whatever, it's not bad. But this is something that could really set Radical off on the right foot with Calibur, and hopefully we'll see them do well. Because I'd like to see a lot more titles of this quality.
So let's talk about the other one, Hercules. This initial five-issue arc is called The Thracian Wars. Another, to me, just... In fact, I didn't like it quite as much as Calibur, but that's not a knock on it at all, because I loved the Calibur. I mean, this was an excellent book also.
Yeah.
The art was very nice. The story... Steve Moore did the story with Admira Wijaya, if I'm not butchering that name too terribly. That setup that they had in this one was just great. You know, it's, you know, I at the end of it, it's kind of like, oh, I should have seen that coming, you know, because it just seemed, you know, kind of interesting the way they were meeting that King Cotys there in the court in Thracia. But, you know, it made perfect sense that they were, you know, doing what they were doing.
Yeah.
With that, I don't want to spoil any of the story with that one. But excellent job.
Yeah.
Well executed.
This was really good. It was a lot of fun. And, I mean, Hercules is something that has been used time and time again for stories. So they were kind of going up against other versions of Hercules, including a current, you know, one over at Marvel, which totally, totally different take. This is more, you know, again, the ancient times or whatever. And
yeah, this is definitely set in ancient Greece. It's not a fantasy book per se. I mean, you have Hercules, who's theoretically, you know, still the son of Zeus and everything like that, but it's absolutely not steeped in fantasy. This is, you know, kind of like the historical action adventure, kind of like 300 or something, more in tone. And, you know, just Hercules could just as easily be a guy who does a good job weaving the story about himself, that he's the son of Zeus, as much as being the actual son of Zeus.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't, you know, he does not come off as having any specific fantastical powers or anything in this story. So,
yeah, if you enjoyed movies like Troy, 300, things of that nature, this is something that I really recommend. I didn't like it as much as Calibur, but I think the Arthurian overtones and Old West setting in Calibur just worked better for me. But this again, is a beautiful book. It's a good story. And, you know, what I like about it is you've got the ancient times and stuff. It's very different than almost everything else I'm reading, as is Calibur, for that matter. You know, they're not just doing yet another superhero thing or another storyline that we've seen half a dozen times. You know, again, we've seen Hercules before, but this is a good execution.
Yeah, you haven't seen this Hercules before. That's the thing. It's a very, very different take. With all the Herculeses that I've seen over the years, this is a fresh take on the character.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that.
And again, for a dollar, for a square-bound, nicely produced comic, it's a bargain. So if you can find these at a local store, definitely go over to the rack, pick it up, flip through it, see what you think. Maybe it'll click with you, maybe it won't. But it's certainly worth checking out, and if they don't have it at a local store, either ask for it, or in the next convention you go to, if Radical's there, go by their booth.
Yeah. definitely ask your store if they can do a reorder. Absolutely ask your store if they can do a reorder on this book for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would be really nice if it was available, but it's just not something to pass up if you can possibly get your hands on it.
Well, and through DCBS, I paid 55 cents a piece for these, as did you, Bob. And I mean, for $1.10 to get the opening two books of, you know, a new publisher, it's a steal.
I would have been absolutely happy having read these books for $2.99 a piece. I would have been completely happy if I paid a regular comic book price for these books, and I would have still thought I got a tremendous value for the money.
I would agree with that, and certainly for Caliber, I would even say $3.99.
Yeah.
Now, $3.99, I'd feel that because it's square bound, and even though it's the full 32 pages, and by that I mean the full, it's not got house ad type crap or anything, it's all story, it still feels a little thin for square bound, but certainly justifies the full price.
So anyone who, you know, picks up the first issue, you know, I'm not going to feel bad at all getting the next four issues of these series at the regular price because it's well, well worth it.
Yeah. And again, if you're not usually into indies or whatever, a dollar, take a chance.
Yeah, I will just really briefly steer people clear of another dollar book, a 99-cent Lesbian Pirates from Outer Space, or I think the full title was I Was Kidnapped by Lesbian Pirates from Outer Space. That is the actual lengthy title in the official indicia there in the bottom of the first page or inside front cover. This was the worst travesty I have had inflicted on me in I can't remember how long. This
even more
story. Oh, my God. This story art, I mean, this came off as I threw this out. I don't throw any comic book out. This hit the round file for me. This was awful.
That's
terrible.
That's pretty bad, yeah.
It was so bad. Stay clear. Do not be tricked into buying this book. It's like, yikes. You know, it's like, I paid like 50 cents for it through DCBS. And I'm like, where did my 50 cents go? Give it back.
Yeah, that's too bad.
I think everyone should today go over and look for the amazing Ironcast episode on the amazing Spidercast feed. John and I are on that episode along with Chris Johnson and Juan Castro talking about the fabulous Iron Man movie that came out last week with Robert Downey Jr., Gwyneth Paltrow, Terrence Howard, Jeff Bridges.
But by all means, if you have not seen the movie, see the movie first, then go listen to the podcast.
Yeah, it's full of spoilers, but, you know, boy, you must have seen the movie. If you're a fan of comics at all, go see the movie right now if you haven't seen it yet. It was so good.
Yeah, excellent film. And
it was fun talking with Chris and Juan about that over on their show.
Yeah, that was good. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Join us next week when we discuss House of Mystery number 1 from DC Vertigo, The Invincible Iron Man number 1 from Marvel, and Wild Cards number 2 from Dobble Brothers Publishing.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.